Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Scott Burton in the studio today for Shona Strausser. Today on the show, Danielle Redmond will be here to give us an update on SEAC and tell us about Disruption, the climate change movie at the Goldtown Theater on September 21st. Dermatologist Dr. Boca Chica will be on the show to tell us about some upcoming clinics and give us some tips for keeping our skin healthy. Michael Orlov, Jonathan Turlove, and Renee Hughes will be here to talk about the 20th anniversary celebration of the 1994 Juno Community Time Capsule. And Arts Up with Miranda McCarty over from the Jack. Those interviews, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. Here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Canadian government has released a plan to address the issue of missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls. The plan includes several measures, but as Dan Karpinchuk reports, some First Nations say it's not enough and fall short of the national investigation many people are demanding.
The plan was announced by the Minister of Labour, Kelly Leach. She's also the Minister for the Status of Women. Leach says the plan suggests projects that would empower Aboriginal women to denounce and prevent violence. The Canadian government has already set aside $25 million over 5 years to address crimes against Native women and girls, but it has refused to consider demands from Native groups and opposition lawmakers for a national inquiry. Leach says now is a time for action.
We don't need yet another study on this topic. We actually need the police to catch individuals who have perpetuated these crimes.
But opposition lawmakers insist the only way to properly address the issue is to call a national inquiry. MP Nikki Ashton is from Manitoba.
In Winnipeg, families are dragging the Red River to find the bodies of their loved ones. Canadians demand action. So the question is, why is this government failing, refusing to call a national inquiry?
Only this week, a British Columbia Supreme Court judge weighed in on the issue. He said it would be a mistake to treat the phenomenon as one for the police to solve. He says it's a sociological issue that must be dealt with as such. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Recently, the House voted overwhelmingly to block the Environmental Protection Agency from implementing its new water rule that has many tribes worried the agency will gain new regulatory power. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington on the battle environmentalists say is key to guaranteeing safe drinking water.
The Environmental Protection Agency has become one of the most despised agencies here in Washington. Now they're taking aim at rainwater and snowpacks, which has enlivened Republicans across the nation. Wyoming Congresswoman Cynthia Lummis says a new rule they're proposing would be devastating.
It just strikes fear in everyone's heart.
The proposed EPA rule is aimed at guaranteeing clean water from California to Maine. It seeks to clarify and expand which of the nation's waters are covered under the Clean Water Act. That law gives the agency power to regulate contiguous waterways, such as rivers that flow from one state to another. But the EPA says there are many areas, especially out west, that are dry for much of the year, until there's a downpour or the snowpack melts. Lummis says the agency's proposal to regulate those temporary stretches of water would expand the scope of the Clean Water Act.
They will be regulating down to the stream, the creek, the ditch, the pond, the puddle.
Virginia Congressman Jim Moran is the top Democratic lawmaker on the House Spending Committee in charge of the nation's interior and environment. He says the proposed rules intended to keep things like farm and stormwater runoff from polluting drinking water miles away from the source.
117 million Americans get their water from water sources that are not running all year long.
Congressman Moran says business interests are dominating the debate in Washington and feeding people false information.
It's not fair to let one river system pollute the people that live downstream from it. The people that are driving this are the mining people, the mountaintop mining removal operations.
Lummis says she hasn't heard from any mining interests.
It is more the state regulators. It is cities, towns, and counties. It is tribal governments. It is farmers and ranchers.
Congress only has a few more legislative days on the docket ahead of November's elections. That means this contemporary water war is likely to keep raging, possibly at a stream or even a currently dry reservoir near you. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org.
If you are a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native business. Go out and vote on November 4th. Voting on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Scott Burton in today for Shona Strausser. And here in the studio now is Danielle Redman. Welcome, Danielle.
Hi.
It's nice to have you. And Danielle, you work with SEAC. And among other things, we're going to talk about disruption today and maybe get an update on SEAC. So why don't we start with that? Tell us a little bit about what SEAC's up to these days.
Well, SEAC got a new executive director back in March. Her name is Melina Marvin, and she has really hit the ground running. She's doing a great job of reinvigorating our programs and just sort of re-envisioning and re-energizing them. We're still doing all of our traditional forest work, watchdogging, logging issues, and just keeping an eye on all that and working with local wood producers.
Guess we should say, too, if you don't know the acronym, Southeast Alaska Conservation Council.
Yeah, it's a mouthful, the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. And if you look us up on Facebook, you have to look it up by the full name, so thank you for pointing that out.
All right.
We are doing all of our traditional conservation work, and we're adding some new emphases on climate change and also our energy program, sort of taking that in new directions. And then we're also rolling out a waterkeeper chapter.
Interesting.
Which is
What's
really
that?
Exciting. It is in conjunction with the Waterkeeper Alliance, which is an international organization. So this is sort of a sub-chapter mm-hmm. of SEAC. It'll be kind of an organization of its own almost. And it'll be really focused on clean water. The Tongass National Forest is actually in some ways a forest of islands.
Right, right.
And there's, a very significant portion of the forest is actually water. And, of course, we depend on water for fisheries and for transportation and for so many different things. So clean water is something that we really, really want to emphasize and focus on going forward. And our transboundary mining campaign is one way that we're doing that. There are several mines that are proposed across the border in British Columbia
mm-hmm.
that are enormous in scale. They're, comparable to Pebble. And they are, again, at the headwaters of an Alaskan fishery here in Southeast this time. And so that's something that we're really putting a lot of emphasis on right now.
Okay. And what do you do there, Danielle?
I am currently the programs coordinator.
Okay.
I started off as the membership director and have since taken on a number of different tasks that are...
Life at a nonprofit.
Yes, they're wonderful and diverse and exciting. And they allow me to do things like this wonderful film screening that we're about to talk about. I just started working with SEAC almost a year ago. My family and I moved down here from Cordova, and my daughter is really thriving here. We enjoy Juno a lot.
Oh, welcome.
Yeah,
glad it's working out for you.
Yeah.
So, disruption. I have the trailer lined up. Before we play that, though, give us the nuts and bolts. When and where is it? Then we'll take it from there.
Okay. So it's Sunday, September 21st at the Goldtown Theater, and the show starts at 1 p.m.
Okay. Why don't we just play the trailer and then see where we go from there.
Great.
Here's the trailer for Disruption.
Movements in history have had people in the street.
We as a people will get to the promised land.
All of us must stand up together.
We will not go home and be quiet. We will go home and organize.
In our past, masses of people have taken the wheel of history and turned it. We have a responsibility to rise to our historical moment.
This is the singular issue of our time that will determine how we live, where we live, and if we live.
The scientific warnings keep intensifying, yet there has been no effective political response.
The tipping points that we face are a catastrophic shift that threatens everything we love, and it happens like that.
Each day of inaction, of business as usual, puts us closer and closer on this crash course.
Climate disruption is a social justice issue. Who gets hit first and worst every time?
What my country is going through as a result of this climate event is madness.
This is not just about the environment. It's about the community. It's about jobs. It's about justice.
This is not a green issue. This is an all of us issue.
This is going to have to be the fight of our lives.
It's communities of people coming together that will solve this.
The most fateful battle in human history, we will fight it together.
There is no replacement for human bodies standing as one, voices raised as one, making a political demand.
Wow.
Subtle.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. How did you choose to show this film?
Well, we initially were thinking that we wanted to do a march on the 21st in solidarity, and then we thought about September 21st here in Juneau, it's probably going to be pouring sideways. So we decided to opt for showing the movie on the 21st. So as you just saw, the climate march is going to be happening in New York on the 21st. It's being billed as the largest climate march in history with over 1,400 groups signed up. People are traveling from all around the country and the world. There's a whole calendar of events and rallies are being held in solidarity all over the globe. So it's an incredibly diverse movement. It's exciting. And if you can't make it to New York, but you still want to participate, this is your chance.
Go to the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater in downtown Juneau. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll be hosting a free film screening and forum showing Disruption. And after the movie, we're going to Skype with someone live in New York from the People's Climate March. Then we're going to have a question and answer session with Professor Aaron Hood from UAS. And he'll talk briefly about some of the impacts that climate change is having and is expected to have here locally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he'll be available to answer questions. And then there will also be lots of opportunities to take action. We have multiple ways to get involved, and they'll be right there at the theater. And then last but not least, it'll be a great opportunity just to get connected with other people who also care about this issue. I think that's really important because isolation and feeling like we're the only one who sees the problem is a really big barrier on issues like this. So it'll be a great opportunity to come together and meet other folks who also want to do something about climate change.
And what time does it all start?
Starts at 1 p.m.
1 p.m. on the 21st. Is that a Saturday?
It's a Sunday.
Sunday, okay. Yeah. 1 p.m. on Sunday the 21st, and everything that you just said.
Yeah.
Forum, Skyping, Aaron Hood.
Yeah.
Community.
And there's one thing that we really want to emphasize, and that is that everyone who thinks this issue is important and wants to do something about it is invited. You don't have to be a quote-unquote environmentalist or an expert. Just come and bring a friend. It takes everyone to change everything.
All right, Danielle Redmond from SEAC. They'll be showing Disruption at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater on Sunday, September 21st at 1 p.m. Thank you for coming into the studio today, Danielle.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
With my baby tonight, refill the cup with my baby tonight. I'd like to sup with my baby tonight, fill the cup with my baby tonight, but I ain't up to my baby tonight, 'cause it's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. baby tonight and pinch the wound with my baby tonight. I'd like to coo with my baby tonight, pinch the woo with my baby tonight. Brother, you fight my baby tonight, 'cause it's too dark. According to the Kinsey report, every average man you know must prefer this loving dovey to court when the temperature is low. But when the thermometer goes way up and the weather is sizzling hot, Mr. Pants or romance is not, 'cause it's too, too, too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. I'd like to coo with my baby tonight and pitch the wound with my baby tonight. I'd like to coo with my baby tonight, pitch the woo with my baby tonight. Brother, you fight my baby tonight, 'cause it's too dark. According to the Kinsey report, every average man you know must prefer this lovey-dovey to court when the temperature is low. But when the thermometer goes way up and the weather is sizzling hot, Mr. God, for a swab, a marine, for a queen, a GI, for his sweetie pie, it's not, 'cause it's too, too, too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too.
As a parent, you may be exploring the advantages of homeschooling, but what type of program is best for your student? Consider HomeBridge, a program associated with the Juneau School District, offering involvement in extracurricular programs within the district. HomeBridge allows up to 2 classes at a local high school with no allotment reduction. HomeBridge is now accepting enrollment for the 2014-15 school year. For more information, call 523-1821 or homebridge.junoschools.org.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon here on Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Scott Burton in for Shona Strausser. In the studio now is dermatologist Dr. Bokchica. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's nice to have you. So we're going to talk about some clinics, and we're going to talk about some tips for keeping our skin healthy. But before we get to all that, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you've been in Juneau for a long time, and you've worn several hats.
Some would say that, yes. So I began, actually, the first dermatology clinic, the first full-time dermatology clinic in Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
I established that in 1985.
Okay.
And I was here full-time until 1993, at which time I left to undergo further training and do a professorship, and I came back in 99, and I have been here since 1999.
Yeah, and so when you say clinics, so you travel around and do clinics in various communities, right?
Because dermatology is such a limited resource
right
here in Juneau. When I first began the clinic, I would not only hold clinics in Juneau, but usually about once a month or once every 3 months, you know, it's easiest. Mm-hmm. I would go to Ketchikan, Wrangell, Sitka, and just do all of Southeast, do a circuit. Okay. Usually about every 3 months I would do a circuit. Got to be a little wearing, but I was glad to deliver that service that was needed to people who could otherwise not come to Juneau.
Okay.
When I came back in 99, I decided I would just focus my energies on Juneau. And so about the third weekend of every month, I come to Juneau. I do have a residence here. I also have a residence elsewhere in Alaska. And I just make it a point to be in Juneau for at least 3 to 5 days once a month.
Okay. And we'll give the dates of those here in a minute.
Okay.
Excuse me. See, you mentioned a professorship. You've done other teaching here in Juneau and some acting.
So it's really strange. So when I was in college, I actually had three majors. I majored in pre-medicine, biology, and romance languages.
Slacker.
So, you know, I maintain fluency in Spanish, Castilian, and Italian, and English when I can. But I also have a background in acting and singing, and I've had the very good fortune of being a part of Perseverance Theater in the past. And the last play I appeared in was The Collected Works of Billy the Kid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. What part did you play in that?
Yeah, it was great. And Juneau is such an incredibly creative community. The thing I love about Juneau, which is absolutely my favorite place in the world, is everyone just does so many things. You never know what the person next to you, you know, has done or can do in terms of creative outlets.
It's true. Well, with this diverse background, what got you to specialize in dermatology?
Creativity.
Yeah.
Again, you know, my initial training was in internal medicine. I also have a background in family practice. I did those two before coming to dermatology. I was actually a physician serving rural Alaska, the Aleutian Islands, Cold Bay, Nelson Lagoon, and some others. And that was an eye-opener. Mm. You know, I oftentimes worked in areas that had incredibly limited resources, where I was oftentimes the only medical practitioner around. There was no one I could call for backup or help. So I was on call pretty much 24/7.
Wow, that sounds challenging.
It was challenging, but I learned so much. And I also had the good fortune of training. I did my, I obtained my medical school degree at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. And I guess I was a bit of an overachiever. I did it in 3 years instead of four. I had to convince the school that I could graduate with the class ahead of me if they just gave me a chance. And they did. So for that, I'm very grateful. But it was a very broad-based, semi-holistic, yet allopathic. The branch of medicine that most doctors are in is allopathic medicine. Holistic is when you look at the body as a whole as opposed to just a part. So when I practice medicine, I tend to practice standard medicine, but I do always have that view of making the entire person whole, and I think it's worked well.
Good.
I went into dermatology because, one, I wanted to be an expert at one thing. When you're a family practitioner, you can be very good at a lot of things, but it's really, really hard to be an expert, you know, on everything.
Sure,
so with dermatology,
sure.
I can focus on one branch of medicine, and within dermatology, there are so many areas. There's cosmetic dermatology, which I also do, you know, in injecting fillers, helping folks prevent the signs of aging, things like that. But I also treat very serious diseases, melanomas, you know, the most serious of skin cancers, all of those.
What do you see the most of in Southeast Alaska?
Eczema.
Okay.
Southeast Alaska has a lot of eczema. In fact, in the entire state, there's a gradient for eczema. The further north you go and the drier the climate, the more eczema you'll see. So, for example, the North Slope has an incredible amount of eczema.
And it's a condition where you have sort of, is it like a rash or
scaly,
dry skin?
Scaly areas of your skin, usually the insides of your elbows, your arms, your chest, sometimes the face, and even the scalp. Yeah, it can occur almost anywhere.
Okay. What would be the second thing you see the most?
Psoriasis. Mm. We see quite a bit of psoriasis. Unlike eczema, psoriasis consists of actually raised areas known as plaques on the skin. And unlike eczema, it occurs in different areas such as the elbows, knees, scalp. Actually, it's one of the more common dermatoses. More than 2% of the American public has psoriasis. That's a lot.
Interesting. And those two that you mentioned, they're not sun-caused necessarily, are they?
Or, no.
I guess it makes sense here in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah. No. But, you know, the thing is, we have quite a mobile population here.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure you can look at your friends or your neighbors. They've all gone to Cabo San Lucas, Hawaii, you know, and other points north and rarely south, you know, other points south rather than rarely north. So with a traveling population, there is enough sun exposure that poses a risk to the person. The lighter your natural skin, the more Northern European your ancestry, the greater your risk of, you know, having a skin cancer at some point in your lifetime. Fortunately, much of that can be avoided by the assiduous use of sunblocks. And I say sunblock because a sunscreen is usually a product that has an SPF, stands for sun protection factor, 15 or less. Once you get to an SPF factor of 30 or higher, you're really dealing with a sunblock. And then you have products such as zinc oxide, which are actually reflectants. Nothing gets through them. It just bounces off you. The only problem is, if you remember when we were kids, you know, the folks with the little white paste on their nose, I don't think anyone wants to really look like that.
Right.
So now we have clear zinc oxide, and we have a plethora of sunblocks that are excellent. I always tell people, if you go with an SPF 30 or higher, generally speaking, you're doing quite a bit of good for yourself.
All right. Thinking about our listeners, who should come and see you? What's the age group when people should really start thinking about this stuff? If they have maybe a question, an anomaly on their skin somewhere, who are you trying to reach?
Well, a couple of things. I'm trying to reach anyone that has something on their skin that is of concern to them. And, you know, I think we all have this inner sense when something is wrong with us or is not wrong with us. Even if you don't have the expertise to know what it is, at least go to someone who does have that expertise and see whether it's an issue or not. So there are issues at all different stages. You know, young people tend to have a real problem with acne. That's probably the most common thing I treat in people under the age of 18, for example. And there are so many wonderful treatments today for acne that no longer are you confined to just one or two modalities. There are several. But it has to be evaluated by an expert first.
And be some happy teenagers out there.
Yes,
right now.
Yes. And I see them every now and then. And it always makes me feel great to see that they're clearer than they were when I first saw them. But then we also have, you know, young adults who may have, you know, early sun exposure, early risks. Perhaps I'm able to talk to them in a way that they can begin to employ certain ways of being that will actually mitigate their risk as they get older. And then with middle age and the elderly, you know, basically senescence is one long process. We just get older. And unfortunately, our defenses do become weaker as we get older, generally speaking. So now we're talking about an accumulated lifetime risk of skin cancer. And so I'd like to capture that audience because I can talk to them about ways that they can still minimize their risk. You know, we can't go back in time, but we can not only minimize their risk for skin cancer, but we can also make their skin look better. We can really mitigate so many of the changes associated with aging and sun exposure. You know, there are procedures that I can do. There are chemical peels. No longer do we have the old chemical peels where you look like someone just splashed your face with some horrendous battery acid. No, today's peels are quite controlled. You only have a few days down. You can go to work after the weekend. There are fillers that will supplant the normal loss of volume that you get with age. But most importantly, hopefully, people will learn how to best take care of their skin.
Okay. And if you want to see Dr. Bocachica personally, in October, you have 3 days of clinics on the 17th, 18th, and 19th.
Yes.
And in November, on the 21st, the 22nd, and the 23rd.
Absolutely.
And your contact is?
Yes. The best way to get a hold of the clinic is through our email. It's bohujo@msn.com. And our website is at www.tongasdermatology.com. And I also maintain a schedule of all the upcoming clinics on that website.
Well, sounds good. I really appreciate you coming into the studio
today.
Thank
you so much. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Take care.
Okay.
And And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 18th of September, 2014. The birthday of Samuel Johnson, Litchfield, England, 1709. When he was 26, he married a widow who was 20 years his senior. An intelligent woman, he decided, and around the same time, he also started writing. He wrote essays, he wrote a play. His most productive period was his 40s. He wrote 200 essays for the newspaper The Rambler, and he wrote his Dictionary of the English Language. And in his 50s, he met young James Boswell, who was 22, who followed him around, took notes, and later wrote the biography, The Life of Samuel Johnson, which made Samuel Johnson one of the most quoted authors in the English language. Johnson said, "Patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel." He said, "When a man is tired of London, he is tired of life." And he said, "A decent provision for the poor is the true test of civilization." It's the birthday of the French physicist Jean-Bernard Léon Foucault, born in Paris, 1819, took the first clear photograph of the sun, helped develop a technique for measuring the velocity of light with accuracy, and is best known for his pendulum, Foucault's pendulum, that demonstrated the Earth's rotation. It's the birthday of Greta Garbo, born Greta Gustafsson in Stockholm, 1905, grew up poor. She was shy. Her father died when she was 15. She had to go to work to help support the family. She became a department store model, went to study at the Royal Dramatic Theater, and caught the eye of a movie director, Moritz Stiller. He took her under his wing, changed her last name to Garbo, cast her in a movie, and when he signed a deal with MGM in Hollywood, he insisted on bringing her along. She became a big star with the movie Flesh and the Devil, 1926, a movie at which she met and fell for her co-star, John Gilbert. They went on to star in a silent film adaptation of Anna Karenina and several more features. They got engaged. Garbo called off the wedding at the last minute, and she never married. She traveled. She had many close friends. She loved New York City, though she did guard her privacy. People quoted the line that she spoke in the movie Grand Hotel, but they misquoted it, and Garbo once pointed out, "I never said, 'I want to be alone.' I only said, 'I want to be let alone.' There is all the difference." Here's a poem for today by Karina Borowitz, reading Anna Karenina. In middle age, Tolstoy apprenticed himself to a bootmaker. He labored at learning the skills of that trade. Sometimes his fingers bled onto the leather as he punched the awl or drew the needle in the outline of a foot. Blisters, he knew, are holier than ink stains. The boots were ugly, and they pinched. Sonia complained, and she refused to wear them. Yet she copied Karenina by hand. How many times? It was his words she loved. How he formed souls out of air, just breath. She preferred the page's purity to his restless hands. If he were a man made only of words, she'd give her whole self to him. Reading Anna Karenina, a poem by Karina Borowitz, from her collection Proof, published by Codhill Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Thank you. The Alaska Folk Festival and KRNN proudly present Falltoberfest, October 3rd and 4th at the Rockwell Ballroom. Six bands and two nights of music, dancing, food, and good cheer. Featuring the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band, Honky Tonk Habit, the Overby Family Band, Tramwreck, Rumblefish, and Cold Country. Enjoy three bands each night at this all-ages event. All proceeds benefit the Folk Festival and KRNN. Tickets available at the Jack, Hearthside, and akfolkfest.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Scott Burton in for Shona Strausser today. And with me now in the studio, Mr. Michael Orlov and Renee Hughes. Welcome, you two.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about the 20th anniversary celebration of the 1994 Juno Community Time Capsule. Very exciting.
Yes, it is. 20 years. We're not going to open the time capsule. We have to wait another 80 years before we could open it. This is just to celebrate 20 years.
You know, what's so great, we were just talking before this interview started, is that this is a living time capsule. You know, we will, you know, open it after 100 years, but it continues to give to the community and allow this attraction to it. People still writing letters you were telling me about. Just a real neat thing all around.
Well, when people hear the word time capsule, they usually think of a small box that's buried in the ground or in a wall of a building or something, and then usually forgotten. Well, ours is a small room in the lobby of the federal building, and it has two windows in it. And so you could walk by and look into the time capsule and see all the stuff.
Yeah.
And every time you look in it, you'll find something you haven't seen before.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's get back to that in a minute, and we'll talk about the celebration tomorrow, which will be at the federal building, right?
Yes, in the lobby of the federal building from 4 to 6 in the afternoon.
All right, but before we get to all that, let's back up. I want to learn about you two a little bit and how you got into this.
Well, I've always have been interested in the concept of a time capsule, but they're usually about 100 years, so you can't be at both ends.
Right.
I wanted to be at both ends. And in 1980, I went back from Juneau to Chicago to my high school 20th reunion, and people brought memorabilia from 20 years ago, sort of like seeing it as a time capsule, and then I realized that 20 years is a long enough time to be at both ends of a time capsule. So
right.
In 1980, I filled up a box of stuff, sealed it, and said, do not open until the year 2000. And I've been doing it every year. So I had to wait 20 years before I could open the first one, but now I'm able to open one every year. Like this year, I opened the 1994, my own personal 1994 time capsule. And then when I heard about Juno, or the federal building was going to think of having a time capsule, I wanted to be involved.
All right. And Renee, how do you get involved?
Well, my husband, Gary Gillette, was working with the city, and he'd heard about this project, that the renovation of the federal building had some additional space. And so I think he and Michael started talking to each other and decided to make a committee of a group of people around the community to come together and decide what would work and how we could make this a community event that would be something that we could share with everybody.
And you love history just in general too, right?
Well, I run the mining museum, so I'm kind of part of history around here.
All right, so this started to organize probably in 93 or something
earlier in 94.
94?
So we spent the last half of 94 putting it all together, getting the room ready, and inviting the community to contribute items. Send in photos of you and your family and your dog, and we'll put them in a community photo album. Send us your recipes. We'll put together a recipe book for the future so they could see what, you know, we ate. We went to all the restaurants in town and got their menus. We put all their menus in there so people could compare prices in the future with what a hamburger cost in 94.
Right.
And some of the restaurants are there and
some are
no longer exist.
Right.
You know, one of my favorite things that you all included in the time capsule are letters from school children.
In 1994, I went to all the schools and I brought acid-free paper and invited students to write letters to students of the year 2094, telling about how things were in 1994. And so we received over 500 letters, which are sealed up in the time capsule. But before I sealed them up, I made copies of all the letters. And 10 years ago, at the 10th anniversary of the time capsule, we posted the letters throughout the Nugget Mall and invited people to come by and find their letter and take it. So somebody who may have been 12 years old in 1994 and wrote a letter is now 22 and would enjoy getting the letter that they wrote. And a lot of people got their letters back.
Again, that's just a great example how this continues to live on and be an active time capsule. It's an open one that we can see and visit rather than one that's buried. So I'd like to read one of these letters, if I may. They're adorable. Yes. Dear someone in the future, hi, my name is Vanessa Avu. I am 11 years old in the 6th grade at Zantakahini Middle School. I live in Juneau, Alaska, the biggest state in the United States of America. The governor right now is Tony Knowles. Right now, Juneau's environment is pretty clean and not polluted. In language arts, we are reading The Call of the Wild by Jack London. In language arts, we read books as a class and learn different ways of language. It is very cold right now because it is winter. My language arts teacher is named Mrs. McAllen. She is also my homeroom teacher. Your 1994 friend, Vanessa A. Vu. So she was 11 and 94, so she's 31 now, right?
Yes. Wow. And we hope she'll come tomorrow to the celebration.
We also have a collection of letters that children wrote 10 years when they picked up their last letter. And the ones that were returned, we now have at the lobby of the federal building. They're all in alphabetical order. So if someone remembers writing a letter and maybe has relocated around town or knows somebody who might have moved somewhere, those letters are available for people to come and collect what they said to themselves.
Well, this was 10 years ago. We had students write letters to themselves, not to somebody in the future, but to themselves and write their address. And we had about 600 of these letters. We mailed them out. About 100 came back non-deliverable by the post office. They couldn't read the addresses or something. But that means 500 letters did make it back to the people who wrote them 10 years ago. And that must be fun for them to receive. And we invite all those people to stop by the time capsule and share maybe something that they wrote 10 years ago.
And a couple of people have responded that they got their letter back and appreciated what they experienced 10 years ago and how their lives have grown over those 10 years.
When you all started this, did you expect it to be this sort of active through the years?
Well, not as far as the letter and the interaction that way, but we did have two windows into the time capsule. So we knew that we didn't want the time capsule to be forgotten. And you could just go in and look inside there. There's a Wonder Bra in there.
Thank you, Marie Darlet. I mean, Marie Olson.
And the toys, all the toys that were popular then, there were a lot of Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So I don't know if people still have that as a toy, but that was very popular.
Some old computers are in there, right?
An answering machine.
Some beer, empty beer bottles.
Yes, yes.
There are a few treats for different. One, a Captain Morgan is there specifically for the port director.
What are you most proud of for this whole project?
Oh, just the way the entire community got involved in it and contributed items. You know, even somebody walking by and saw what we were doing, they gave us a business card of theirs. We took it with Renee had control of the staple gun. She just stapled it right there to the wall inside the time capsule, and it's going to be there for 100 years. So people enjoyed participating in this activity because often you hear of a time capsule and the only thing in it is a letter from the mayor or some other dignitary. Here it's really our stuff.
A people's time capsule.
Exactly.
How about you, Renee?
And there's a lot of things in there that had a lot of emotion. One gentleman hiked, was up on Mount Everest, and he had to be rescued, and he lost his fingers and toes, and it was a very tragic event for him to be one of the early people up on Mount Everest. And his skis are in there, and, you know, the sad parts of the capsule. There was a young man that got killed in a snowboarding accident, and his friends wanted to make sure he was remembered.
Oh.
So his hat's in there. But there's also lots of fun things when there's one gentleman who brought us a chainsaw because he'd been logging. He brought a file to make sure they could still sharpen the chain. He even gave directions where to get back to the area where he had cut the trees so that they could see what the area looked like 100 years after he had cut it once.
Wow. Very interesting. So what's tomorrow going to look like, 4 to 6 at the Federal Building?
Well, basically, we're going to have cake. When you have a celebration, usually you
Absolutely.
Have cake. And we have all the about 100 letters that the post office was not able to deliver, so we have those on a table to, you know, for people to look through and see if they recognize anybody.
It's not going to be cake from 1994.
No.
That was the only thing we would not put in the capsule.
I think there may be a Twinkie which should survive. You know, so.
It's sealed
so
up.
It's basically to come by, and the main celebration is on the outside of the security area, so you don't have to go through security to just, you know, be there and whatever. But if you want to see inside the window of the time capsule, you just have to go through security, which is very easy.
Yeah, bring your ID.
Sounds like a lot of fun. 4 to 6 tomorrow at the Federal Building, the celebration of the 1994, the 20th anniversary celebration of the 1994 Juno Community Time Capsule.
Yes.
Michael Orlov, Renee Hughes, thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, thank you.
And I happened to graduate from high school in 94, and I was all about Pearl Jam. They were the big thing. So here's a little Pearl Jam for our listeners.
She's all there to the mountain. Juneau.
Ketchikan.
We come from different places.
Sitka.
Haines.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we can make a real difference in the building blocks of life.
Children succeed in school. Families gain financial stability. The health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly, so do our communities.
Real change won't happen without you.
Help make a difference in your community by supporting United Way of Southeast Alaska. Learn more at UnitedWaySeak.org.
We are here in the studio on Thursday, September 18th, 2014, with Miranda McCarty. Welcome. Thanks for coming all the way over from the Jack.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you in the studio. And we are here for your regular Thursday edition of Arts Up.
That's right.
I feel like we need a little, like, theme music. Arts Up.
We do. Yeah. Could you work on that for us?
I could do a little Tony Rice. Bring in a little music underneath?
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah, excellent.
Nice. All right.
Thanks.
So Arts Up, what's going on in Juneau this weekend?
As usual, there's a lot going on in Juneau. Tonight, actually, we have Tango Thursdays at the new Suite 907, and that's from 7 to 9. Have you been out there?
I've not. Tell me about it. Have you?
I haven't been out there either, but I heard there's an LED dance floor.
Ooh.
And it's supposed to be much classier than it was before.
Interesting.
Yes.
Sounds like fun. Tango Thursdays.
Tango Thursdays.
At a new club in Juneau.
It's brand new.
I like it. All right.
And parking day is tomorrow from 9:30 a.m. until 4 p.m.
Okay.
Have you heard of Parking Day?
I've not. Please tell.
So, Parking Day is happening all around the nation and possibly worldwide, it looks like. And it's just where local businesses and citizens transform public parking spaces into public parks and social spaces. So, this one's actually hosted by Corvus Design and the Rookery and Alaska Robotics. So, those are three great places that should be pretty cool.
So, just downtown parking spaces, you can set up some, like, lounge chairs and a coffee table?
I feel like they might set it up, and then the public just gets to show up and enjoy it.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out where it is. Front Street.
Hmm. That sounds like fun. That's tomorrow?
Yeah, that's tomorrow. It's all day, 9:30 to 4.
Huh. Interesting. All right, what else is going on?
There's a pirate party tomorrow night at Suite 907.
Wow.
First 50 people get free eye patches.
Pirates. lots of stuff going on at 907.
Have you heard of JLO's Man Choir, Juno Lyric Opera's Man Choir?
I have heard of it. I would like to learn more.
Okay, so that's at Holy Trinity Church from 7 p.m. on.
All right.
And it's directed by Richard Moore. You can get tickets at Vendini, our website, or
cool.
their website.
Cool. What else we got going on? I'm looking at the community calendar here as well on KTOO, which is we share with the Jack.
That's
a great
right.
resource for figuring out what's going on. I know tomorrow night, too, is the Evening at Egan lecture with Ernestine Hayes and Sherry Simpson, and that starts at 7 p.m., out at the university. That's something I know.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on there.
Yeah, that's going to be a great talk. I'm looking
Sounds
forward
like a good
to
one.
That. And what else do we got here?
We have Board Game Club on Sunday.
Nice.
It runs from 12 p.m. until 5 p.m.
Where's that?
Nugget Mall Community Room.
Okay.
You can find out more at JunoBoardGameClub@yahoo.com.
All right. And what else? What's going on at the Jack these days? What are you guys up to?
So the Jack sponsors the Music on the Fly series.
Mm-hmm.
And this Sunday it's Brian Graceland. I don't know if anyone caught him at one of our Food Truck Fridays, but he has a pretty interesting voice. It's not one you hear on hardly anyone. It's very deep and, yes, it's a very interesting voice that it's really neat to hear live.
Cool.
So and check him out.
So I know some stuff happens at the airport. Where's this one?
That's
this
the Juneau International Airport from 7 p.m. until 8 p.m.
That's this Sunday.
Mm-hmm. This Sunday.
Awesome. That sounds good. What else should we tell folks about?
We have an upcoming season. People can get their season passes.
That's a good idea. Who are a few folks that will be part of this upcoming season?
Well, the first one coming up is October 30th, and it's the United Kingdom Ukulele Orchestra. They're going to be at JDHS. They're hilarious.
I bet that's going to be fun. People can go see the Iliad this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen it?
I haven't. Have you? I'm going to go see it next weekend.
Okay.
I heard good things.
Yeah. Boston's pretty amazing, so I'm sure it's amazing.
Well, I wish we had more time
talk
about our stuff. Miranda McCarty, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Thank you for tuning into a Juneau Afternoon today, Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Tomorrow on a Juneau Afternoon, Pat Moore hosts. We'll get a preview of this Friday's Evening at Egan presentation by Sherry Simpson and Ernestine Hayes. We'll talk with organizers from the Juneau Lyric Opera about this weekend's Man Choir performance. We'll talk with Nancy Barnes about the efforts to get out the Native vote. Ginny Palmer will be here to talk about her 9 years with the Friends of the Alaska State Museum. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more Friday at 3 on a Juneau Afternoon. The weather tomorrow looks like rain, highs around 55. Saturday, rain, highs around 56. And Sunday, rain likely, lows around 48. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.